Question. Did your family members not notice your absence? Answer. No. At that time I worked as a mobile photographer and was often on the road for 20 days. On those occasions, I took a lot of shots of people who did not want to go to town to get their pictures taken. Question. What did you do when you returned home from your adventure? Answer. At first I recovered, then I resumed my daily work. Every evening I took paper and pencil in hand and committed the whole account to paper. I completed this story about a year ago, after writing 400 pages. Question. With what intentions did you write this account? Answer. Mainly because I did not want to forget about this experience. Here I want to finish this summary. Who has the opportunity to read it? May they criticize, praise or judge as he pleases. He should interpret it as he pleases. But on one point, I am sure that most people agree that it is very important for humanity to abandon the further development of atomic energy. It is of little use to us and causes us so much headache. We must strive to discover the ways that enable us to get the solar energy. This would be of benefit to all, for the poor and the rich. Such a success is not granted atomic energy. Their use for peaceful purposes is very small, and only the world's great ones can benefit from it. The less well-to-do can only watch from afar and at the most become ill from the severely damaging rays. Map below, 1. An incident followed by a dramatic awakening. In May 1958, I was on my way to the interior of the country near the community of Sarandi and the neighboring villages, where I wanted to collect unpaid accounts for photographic work that I had completed some time before. At that time, I was practicing the profession of a traveling commercial photographer, which I gave up recently to work again as a municipal tractor driver for the community. I had been to Sarandi before, but then this very significant incident occurred. It was the 14th of May. I was on my way back from the interior of the country and was already on the road from Sarandi, at a crossroads called Natalino, still about 18 kilometers from the city. I had to cover this last stretch on foot. I had hitchhiked to Passo Fondo. It was about 7 p.m. when I was passing the farm of Dr. Dionisio Peretti. Suddenly I noticed a strange light in the sky, above the edge of the woods, about 200 meters from where I stood on the road. At first I thought that light was something supernatural. In our area, people often talk about a buried treasure. I crossed the railway line and carefully approached this spot. When I reached about 30 meters, I was astonished to discover that there was a large round object about 30 meters across. It looked like two bowls, one inverted over the other. The craft had a glow reminiscent of iron being heated. It was a reddish gray. Unfortunately, I am slightly color blind, so I can hardly distinguish colors. Instinctively I wanted to flee. But my curiosity was greater than my fear, and I went even closer to it. Suddenly I noticed two figures, then a strong beam of light hit me, and I lost consciousness. When I came to, I was lying on a kind of hospital bed. I wanted to raise my arms, but realized immediately that they were tied down. I looked around and saw that I was in a rectangular room, one side of which was rounded. My first impression was, I am aboard a ship. But as I thought logically, I rejected this idea as impossible. I now noticed figures close to me that were similar in their general appearance to mine. I tried to speak to them in different languages, but to no avail. Some seemed to be indifferent, the rest probably did not hear me, they did not even look. Minutes later, two people came to me and untied me. I tried again to communicate with them. They got me on their feet. I felt very weak. They gestured and took me to an adjacent room. They pulled a kind of long cape with sleeves from a shelf. It went to my feet. I dressed in this garment. I returned with my two companions back to the first room. From there we went through an automatically opening door and went down some steps. We arrived in a room that was probably just below the first one. A door opened again in front of us. We went through it and went down a few steps again. I was probably now on the bottom floor. We went through two rooms, then through a hallway to a door in the background. It opened and I was ready for a new room, But to my great surprise, this door opened onto an outdoor platform. It was dark, but I could see a completely different city. I did not feel well and felt like I had lost half of my body weight. At the same time, I had the impression that my limbs had increased in size. My two companions supported me under the arms. The tall, gleaming buildings that I could distinguish now nearly blinded me in their many-colored splendor. I did not know this city, Itklgnatiamt, be a capital of the earth, of which I know many, at least from pictures, books or films. We climbed onto a platform, which gently lowered itself to a narrow street, lined by tall buildings. I saw only pedestrians. The crew of my ship wore a kind of thick jumpsuit overall of an unusual light color. At the time, I didn't take in all the details of their clothing. I will try to give a more detailed description later. I noticed that my companions didn't wear the same sort of cape they had given me to wear. We walked about 300 meters down the narrow street, then climbed up a few steps up a house and entered the ground floor of a tall building. After passing along a 15-meter corridor, we entered a room on our right. My companions still supported me because I still was not able to stand on my own. The building seemed to be made of metal, as I had already noticed on entering. Inside it was lined with a fabric. They left me alone in the room and left. I stood there leaning against the wall for a few moments, looking around my prison. It was more like a normal room than a prison cell. The walls of this room were also lined with thick fabric, it looked like fur. In one corner was a sink built into the wall, from the tap constantly water was flowing. I was very thirsty and drank, but the extremely light water barely quenched my thirst. The room had a bed and a small table on one wall. I went to the bed, touched it and realized that it was very soft. I sat on it and sank almost to the floor. I lay down and relaxed my back. I was very hungry and wondered where I could be. What were those people who took me? Why did they take me? I had done no harm to anyone, certainly not, because I had never seen them before. I thought of my family if I would ever see them again, which seemed unlikely to me at the moment. I felt very weak. It must have been a long time since I had eaten. Now three people came into the room. Probably my two earlier companions together with a woman. This was carrying a bowl with a lid. She put these on the table and lifted the lid off. Then the three went away again. I went to the table and saw that there was a meal in the bowl for me. I looked at the content but could only recognize the flesh among the different things. The bowl had four compartments. I took the only utensil they had left to me, a combination spoon and fork, and tasted the meat, which had already been cut into small pieces. It did not differ much from our meat, but had a different taste. The second compartment contained a viscous mass, much like gelatine. In the third, something dark baked was what looked like a hard bread. Of the latter things, I tried only the bread. I did not want to try the other two. I ate a small amount. I drank some more water, sat down on the bed again and wondered if I would be able to last on this food. I ate some more of the meat and a bread at TM. 2. How to overcome language difficulties. I was still thinking about all my problems when the door opened and three people came in, the two I already knew, and a third man who I judged to be a person of importance from his deportment and air of authority. They asked me to accompany them. The newcomer led the way, and I was again supported, escorted by the other two. We walked down a corridor and finally arrived in a brightly lit, spacious, approximately 60 square meter room. To the right in the background stood a row of high-backed armchairs and a rectangular table. In the opposite corner, there were several low armchairs, arranged in a semicircle, in front of which were some desks. I saw several chairs of the same shape in the room. On the walls hung various landscapes. As I was looking around, a door to my left opened and several people entered. They all looked at me, some curiously, others indifferently. When they were still talking, a signal sounded and everyone sat in a semicircle on the chairs. Another three people came in through another side door. These, too, seemed to occupy a higher rank. My two helpers and I were still standing. One of the last to arrive on my right rose and opened the meeting. Several of those present made speeches. It was lively discussion. From their looks and gestures, I realized that I was the subject of the discussion. These people could have been Russians. Maybe they thought I had some secret weapon with me, which I might have to pay for life imprisonment or even with my life. At a signal of one of those present, all were silent. He turned to me and told us to sit in the middle of the two semicircular rows. I was approached by someone who tried to communicate using four or five languages. On one side I noticed a certain restlessness, since at first a communication was an ill. I wanted to make myself completely understood and tried speaking in Portuguese, Spanish and Italian. No one understood me, and I was about to despair when I remembered that I could speak German. I said a few words in German, whereupon one of the men jumped up joyfully and asked, "German?" I said yes. To my great astonishment he turned me around by the shoulders to face his colleagues. After another discussion, the meeting was closed, and those present moved away through the doors through which they had entered. I myself was led back to my room by my companions. I saw that they carried no weapons. On their belt hung something that reminded me of a kind of flashlight. 3. An explanation of the incident. The two men who supported me left me alone with the third. I thought to myself, now something must happen, whether good or bad. The man looked at me with an open smile and said in German, "Come on." I followed him down a short corridor that ended at a large door, opened it, and we came to a 6-meter-wide road that was full of pedestrians. I do not need to emphasize that every detail that I saw astounded me so much that I sometimes lost my power of speech, and with all their superiority, I felt like a robot guided by some external influence. I felt that I had to obey all their demands. I would have liked to know where I was, and who I was dealing with, but who should I have asked, where no one understood me, and me not them. Among many other things, there were two things that interested me the most at the moment. The unhurried movement of the many people, and the vivid glow that emanated from the walls of the buildings, and from which I was initially almost blinded. But I soon got used to it and saw a variety of colors, mostly silver and white, which I could best distinguish, and many other colors besides. We went by several blocks without seeing a single vehicle. Only pedestrians who did not notice me. Apparently I did not seem strange to them. I wore a coat with a hood that covered my own clothes. These, as well as my shoes, were very different from theirs. When we were between two not very high buildings, I looked up. I must confess that I almost died of fright. The sky was littered with aerial vehicles. It looked as if an attack was being prepared against these defenseless people moving slowly through the streets. After a few moments, however, I realized that there was no hostile intent up the road. It was a back and forth from and to all sides. I had never seen such aircraft before. One of them repeatedly flew around the upper part of a house. I closed my eyes and covered my ears with my hands, not wanting to see and hear when a plane ATM hit a building. Suddenly I felt a hand on my arm, opened my eyes and saw an airplane land on the platform of a house. Two people, probably a married couple, quietly got out. My companion, who walked in front of me, had a wry smile about his mouth. He probably would have explained everything to me. Twice he opened his mouth, but then said nothing. He could not speak German except for the few words he had told me. He patted my shoulder as if to say, "Calm down," and motioned for me to move on, only half reassured, following him, turning the corner, going about 15 yards, and entering a 4- or 5-story house with its door open. We walked down a small corridor, entered a well-furnished room, crossed it, and returned to a corridor that led into the background of the building near a staircase. Once there, my companion pointed to a room that could be a prison cell or a dormitory. At that moment, I did not think to take a closer look and entered without hesitation. He closed the door and left me alone. I was paralyzed and upset because I was almost treated as a prisoner, but on the other hand, as a guest of honor. The room was similar to the one I had stayed in, maybe a bit bigger. It had not only a sink, but next door also a bathroom. Since there was already a bathroom, I decided to take a bath. New disappointment seized me when I noticed that even this water seemed to be as light as gas. I had the impression that a foot basin that stood on the ground would not overturn if you threw a bucket full of that water against it. After I had taken my bath and dressed again, I heard a noise at the door. It opened up and I saw my friend who had brought me here. He was accompanied by a boy who had a pack of clothes in his arms. He put her down on the table and left again. My friend approached me and gestured to me to dress. I nodded my head and he walked away too. I looked at the clothes. The first thing that came into my hands was a pair of pants, normal to the knee. Lower down it became very tight and therefore had a zipper on the side. The second thing I picked was a blue shirt with a white round and fairly wide collar. Also there was a zipper in front instead of the buttons. The sleeves seemed strange to me. From the shoulder to the elbow they were covered with lace and fringes. Towards the wrist they became so tight that I could barely pull them over my hands. I thought to myself that I would never make such a shirt. But now I had to put it on and dressed my new costume. Finally, a kind of tight-fitting shoes with heels. The latter did not seem to be made of leather but cloth. I considered myself now in my complete outfit and thought, open the curtain and see the clown. At that thought, I laughed, imagining how they would laugh at me when I showed up at home. There was a knock, and my friend entered. He looked me up and down, smiling with satisfaction. He patted my shoulder and nodded affirmatively without saying anything. But I felt that he was only too happy to talk to me. So we faced each other without speaking. I thought we could be good friends if we had an opportunity to communicate. He was middle-aged and of normal height and always had a boyish smile on his face, making him look young. He took me by the arm and politely led me out of the room. We walked back down the corridor and entered the previously mentioned large room, which I almost did not recognize because it was full of people. I could not tell if they were men or women. I was still very impressed with my previous walk through the streets. But what I saw now was even more impressive. There was a table with armchairs on which about 15 people sat, almost as many stood in the room and talked animatedly. The whole thing seemed like a clucking chicken farm. When we entered it suddenly became quiet, everything turned to me. Of course I had been the topic of their conversation. My companion spoke a few words, probably I was introduced to them. When he spoke, the others nodded. A slightly older man now rose. He was at least 2 meters tall and muscular, but not fat. He had a very pale face, which was in strange contrast to his dark, already slightly thinned hair. With my height of 1.86 meters and my 80 kilograms, I've always seemed of good size, but compared to his frame, I now seemed small. A friendly smile was around his mouth. He came up to me and said to my astonishment, pointing to a chair, "Sit down." In correct German. He sat down next to me. Right at the beginning I would like to say that the conversation was conducted in German. I find it difficult to translate everything into Portuguese. Shown in English here. I looked around more closely. There were 3 women among the attendants, 2 of them of more advanced age, the 3rd being about 20 years old. Since my arrival, I had not had a chance to look closely at a woman, so I took a close look at the 3 of them. They were not ugly, but had as white faces as if they had just been released from a hospital and suffered a major blood loss. All the others were men, about 20 in number, and all were very tall. My examination of those present was interrupted by the question of my name and further details. I said, "My name is Artur Bullet." He repeated, "Artur Bullet," and spelled my name. I corrected him. He continued, "Are you a German, or can you only speak German?" "I am of German origin, but even my grandfather immigrated to Brazil, where he married a Portuguese woman." He spoke a well-understood German. Only sometimes he used a C or K for another letter. I asked for his name. "A cork cat," he replied, pronouncing his name slowly and accentuated so that I understood him at once, and as he smiled pleasantly, I ventured a few more questions. Are you German as well? With a gentle smile, he said, no, no, I'm an Akkadian. Akkadian? I asked, I do not know such a country, where is it? He said with the utmost naturalness, it is not on the earth. I swallowed dryly a couple of times and asked, it's not on earth? Yes, I said that. The affirmation worried me so much that I feared he would attack me with a howl or anything worse, all the more so as the man stood smiling before me as if he had just said a good joke. I shook my head in disbelief, thinking hard, and replied, but where are we then? Why am I here and what do you want from me? The attendees seemed to follow our conversation attentively, but apparently they did not understand it. There were drinks offered. They were all confused, but I did not want to take anything because I did not know if it tasted good to me. I did not want to risk anything. The man said to me in a calm and sympathetic voice, above all, I would like to tell you that you are not exposed to any dangers here. You are with people who will be friendly to you, without having to know you well. Your coming here was more or less accidental. What do you mean by accidental? Well, we did not intend to take you from Earth here. When he said from the Earth here, I thought, am I really not on Earth anymore, or is the guy just making fun of my ignorance? With an amiable smile, he said, there is someone who has already been punished for taking you. So do not worry, because before the Earth has turned 10 times, you will be there again, unless... He did not finish that sentence. I was afraid to ask more questions. I was afraid there would be more news like that I had just heard, that I was far away from Earth on another planet. I felt dizzy and paralyzed, only my brain was still functioning. I really wanted to have an explanation for the many things I had seen in the last few hours. Okay, fine, he said, something that set me free. We want to have dinner now. I do not know if you like our food. We have some dishes that you do not know on Earth, but there are many similar ones that will be sure to please. And I will tell you details later on how you got to here and how you will go back to Earth. I wanted to answer him, but despite all my efforts made no sound. Two young people had come in and started to serve bowls that at first seemed to me to be gold. But as I soon realized, they were neither gold nor any other metal, but from a material unknown to me. The plates were made of this material. The meal was not very abundant. It seemed to me that there was some control over not too much, but not too little. I now tried to behave like the others, and when the table was set, I rose like all present. They said a prayer to heaven that I did not understand, but I prayed in my own way. After prayer, they sat down again and began to serve themselves. I watched sharply and noticed that there was no other difference than ours. Everyone took something and let the bowl go on. There were 8 to 10 dishes, of which I only ate 3, meat, then something that looked like honey cake, and some kind of rice. I did not dare approach the other dishes. I wanted to take that opportunity later, if there was a later at all. During and after the meal, they talked. Certainly they talked about me, and in their gestures I realized that there was a certain amount of disagreement. As I could understand nothing, I sat back in my chair, taking stock of my situation, and came to the conclusion that there might be worse situations. I thought, come, what I want, that's my destiny. They seemed to have come to an agreement, got up and went out. Eventually, only my first friend and Daycock remained. The latter rose and said, my friend Duek would be glad if you stayed in his company, but since you cannot communicate, it makes more sense for you to stay with me while you are here on Akkad. I felt that my fate depended on these two men. Akok said, so I can tell you all about our customs, and we can make comparisons between Earth and Akkad. We said goodbye to Duek, that was my first friend's name. Regarding welcome and farewell, I have to say that the Akkadians don't EMT shake hands, but put a hand on each other at EMS shoulders. I expected us to return back through the same passage through which we had come. To my surprise, we went further down and entered a terrace. The strong brightness and the gloss of the houses confused me very much. I looked around and looked for a staircase, but found none. I thought we would have to go back from here. There's no exit from here that we could go through to get back to where we came from. I was even more confused when Acorn went to a kind of ice cream parlor. He signaled me to follow him and went through a door. I feared that this might be a trap and looked carefully at first. There I saw one of those wonderful devices that I had seen flying before. I stepped closer. We got into the machine and Acorn closed the doors. I took a close look at all the details. The apparatus looked from the outside like a round balcony or like the body of a station wagon. Inside I saw no steering devices, it contained only two small levers and a few pointers. Acorn now put a hand on each lever and pressed on the left. The machine began to lift half a meter and then stopped in the air. Acorn gently steered it out onto the terrace. He then pressed the left lever again and we climbed upwards for about 150 meters. When he pressed the right lever, the apparatus flew forward at great speed. I could see that he stepped on a kind of double accelerator with his right foot. I was very surprised that I heard no sound. You only heard the gear of a well-lubricated gear. So we flew for about a minute. As I almost burst with curiosity, I asked, "How does the engine of this apparatus move?" He turned to me and said, "By solar energy." "Solar energy? What kind of driving force is that?" "Yes, is this not known on your Earth?" "No, I never heard of it. It is possible that this is known somewhere, because our scientists have made many discoveries that remain unknown to most of the Earth dwellers." He nodded, smiling, and said, "Solar energy is composed of waves from the sun, the same ones that make the planets circle around the sun. Of course we know that they are not known on Earth yet." Thoughtfully, I replied, "I know a lot about sound waves used for rocketry." "Yes, that's what these waves are used for. The source is the same. There are many things we have discovered and used for more than 120 Earth years. That's fantastic. You have been ahead of us for more than 100 years in the technical field, and I suppose not only in this field, but in other areas as well. Considering that our scientists possess an already superhuman intelligence, are not we all human beings created by God? So that means that you too believe in God." He gave me a quick and hard look. Unfortunately, I realized too late that I had offended him with my question. He applied a hard tone to me for the first time and said, "We not only believe in him, but we love and respect him." "Excuse me, I did not mean to insult you, and besides—" "What, and besides? Do not you know that everything that exists was created by God? Or do you think that there are two gods who created Earth and Akkad?" "No, I did not mean that. For me everything is so strange here, you must understand me." "Yes, yes." He briefly broke off the subject. "We will now go to the city where I live. You will see the largest city on Akkad." "The biggest city of your planet?" "Yes, it has about 90 million inhabitants." At that moment, about 10 minutes had passed since our departure from Khon. Later I learned that this was the name of the first city I saw on Akkad. He pushed a button and suddenly we were flooded with sun inside the apparatus. The cabin had a double roof. The outer was made of sheet metal, while the inner part was made of a transparent material that seemed to protect us after the outer part had been withdrawn. We had a magnificent view. You could see forwards and upwards. He tilted the machine on my side and said, "Look." I looked down and the machine flew over a town, which took several minutes. What I saw surpassed everything I ever saw in my life. I could never have imagined such a thing, and I couldn't even believe it, even though I saw it with my own eyes. If he had shown me a man who can eat with his ears, I would have been no more surprised than the sight of this city. I could not get enough of all these houses and buildings. Almost all of them shone brightly. When I saw the wonders of Khon, I was already very impressed, but this was just overwhelming. The many barrel-shaped vehicles in the air attracted my particular attention. They all looked similar to the one we flew in. I use the term barrel-shaped because I cannot think of anything better. They came and went, flying high and low across the city in large numbers. They seemed to me like house ants in the open air.